Band 11, Vipassana.
You hold in the corner, yeah? Feel, go a little bit backwards. Yes. Go a little bit backwards, wide in the circle. Yeah, quite like this. And he is half in the corner. You stay in your, I am afraid you might not feel good. That's a nice comb. I like you in there. Liv, did you wash your hair?
Yes.
Shining till here. Yes. Oh, what a freaking, what you got on?
It's the Friday dress.
What is it?
The Friday dress.
Friday dress?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
It's Friday today.
In light blue. Look, I match you. Wonderful. So, yeah, you, if you need, you like a little bit support, Elizabeth, maybe you go close to that post in case. And you are tall enough to be in the back. In your old corner, if you like. So, I just don't want you to feel uncomfortable. You don't have anything to do. I just like to have you a little close, since we are. Could it kind of nice? Mm-hmm. Did you have all your pies? Mm. Mm. All right, that way you like, because you have pain all the time, huh? Yeah, right, so it's that way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're packed in enough. You think it's all necessary. Enorm. Yeah. No, it's okay if you feel cool. Put something underneath you, under your buttocks, because you sit a little safer. Yeah, higher. Otherwise you fall back. Yeah. It's not good sitting that low here, and the knees too high up. So now when Sugata comes in here, it's all separated there. So we can get in the corner for leaving.
Can sit here?
Yeah, or he likes that corner. Or he comes with the whole upper. Yeah, here. Your corner is here. So you can fold a little bit better. Mm-hmm. What? You can see. Honor to the aged ones.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, how does that look? I must have her closer. And this one matches that. Ooh. Are they growing here? These poppies?
Yes.
Beautiful. Look at this abundance. Totally waste of nature. So much color. You consider that? It's color. Take the color out of it. Not much left. Color. That's what you really see. Color. Everywhere you look, you see everything is color. That's what comes through. And then the next is form. And then the next is name. But when you can, when you remain in the pure experience of seeing, you really see only color and form. You don't see the object yet. Now can you continue looking color and form without giving name and without investigating that your grandmother had the same one in her garden or something. Just continuously renewing your seeing consciousness, color and form. You just don't even name it is pink or dark pink or green. You kind of just perceive it as an energy field, color. Have you done it, Kai? Are you present or did you dream? Were you somewhere else?
No.
Did you look at other colors?
No, I just looked at the
clouds. Uh-huh. The dark red one?
No, it was
there. Uh-huh, the little ones. Yeah.
It's nice to think that the flowers need, they need earth and they need water and sun.
Yeah.
But they also need somebody to look and see how beautiful.
Yeah, very true, the appreciation. As with human beings too. I like to, with human beings is that too. They cannot live so well alone. That should be the center. Yeah.
That's the bread.
Mm-hmm. They cannot live so well alone, not for the reason that they feel lonely. Well, it's one reason. But that really means that no one is around to appreciate them. You see? Two lovers, the love to each other is maintained and nourished very much by mutual appreciation. Have you thought of that, Kerstin?
Yes.
Yeah, mutual appreciation. And when that isn't, when we are very sloppy in that, so gar nicht aware, so not at all aware, like Eric brought it up in concern to the flower, we forget that. And then also the relationship suffers a little. One feels not loved so much anymore. One feels neglected. These are all means actually that there is not enough appreciation from the other one, but it works both ways. One feels the other one doesn't appreciate, you probably play a role in it. It's mutual. But we have the tendency to see only the weakness in the other person. Yeah, very nice. All colors. Many colors and forms. That goes for other things too, not only for the flowers, for the trees, for really even for things. I begin on, he has weakened a little bit, but when I could not walk at all, the first days when I started walking, I had a walker, something like two canes on this side together, from metal, and then a bar across, and then I could lift myself with both hands. I became very appreciative of that instrument there, very grateful that it was there, and that one mind did design it that way. Maybe it interests you to hear that in Japan, each year, in every year, the women celebrate the day of the needle. They collect the needles which they break throughout the year, and then they gather and bury the needles which they broke. But the whole gathering is actually an appreciation for that instrument, needle, for sewing. It's a day of the needle. The doctors, by the way, also gather appreciating the scalpel, is that right? The one, the knife.
Scalpel.
Yeah, scalpel. You see that it's a different, it's an extended way, it's a widened heart already relating to the things in gratefulness or appreciation. And that is not because of the things, it's because of the consciousness realizes. Another consciousness has done that, and it was very useful, and everyone likes it, and so it is appreciated.
In Nepal, the house animals worship. There's one day of the cows where I get flowers from the neck, and one day for the dogs where I get meat as much as they like, and nobody beats them. They get also flowers around the neck.
Oh, really?
And so on.
Yeah, very nice. It's an expression of appreciation. It's a festival made of it. Actually, the very aware person doesn't need that festival of appreciation anymore. He appreciates through his or her awareness every moment. That consciousness is so wide that it can appreciate and relate in gratefulness or in appreciation or in joy, you see, every moment of life to whatever it is related. You see, you just don't realize how our tight relating to always my emotions and my feelings, and just being in worry about myself is totally disconnecting and narrowing down myself, disconnecting me from the environment. And it's narrowing down and closes the door to happiness, to openness. It's actually egotism. There is state of mind mentioned, one of the four state of minds by the Buddha mentioned, which is called mudita, which means is that mind which or that mental force which enables me to be pleased when others have joy or when others experience happiness. Mudita, I think we can translate it as sympathetic. Sympathetic.
Mudita is mitfreud.
Yeah,
to be happy together with somebody who is happy.
Sympathetic joy. That is that feeling which I feel as sort of pleasedness, happiness, pleasantness when I experience other people's happiness and well-being.
Is it not the opposite of jealousy?
Well, it is all the opposite of a lot of things. Mm. Number one, it diminishes tremendously or weakens envy. You know, we all have this in our heart. Jealousy is actually a form of envy, a form of anxiety too. And this mental ability, I like to say, which opens up to other people's happiness and is joyful and pleased, is a very strong force in overcoming envy, jealousy, anxiety, and fear. You see, you are then less egotistic. Why? Because you are with the others, with the joy and happiness with others in your mind, and you're not anymore so tied to your worries and your needs and your desires. It cuts loose from I, from me. You should really cultivate that quality in your heart. It widens, it cuts through the narrowness of my heart, it cuts through the being tied to my ego all the time. Now, in a community like this, you have plenty of opportunities all the time. When you live with one person, you have it too, but the tendency is that there is the mudita's enemy coming in. There is a near enemy and a far enemy, which mudita has. That is, the near one is, the far one, I think, is envy. And the near one is affection, is this kind of personal togetherness which is not cutting loose. It is going to the expense of being open to others. You understand? Karen? Do you? Mm-hmm. So you remember that. Then it helps you There is a wonderful custom in I think in the Sufi tradition, in the Arabic countries, I think the Sufis, that when that there is a bell which is ringing very joyfully, loud, through the village, through the surrounding. And when that particular bell rings, everyone knows, aha, something good happened. The bell is a ringing for a good event which has happened, that all people can take part in that good event. There is one, somebody born, a baby, a healthy baby, the bell will go. Everyone saying, what has happened? What has happened? Why is the bell ringing? Where is the joy? Let's can participate. So everyone opens up their heart because there is something very beautiful, joyfully, pleasant happen. Another event, maybe a birthday or what is happy in life? Somebody baked a great blueberry pie. Mm-hmm. People gathering, great event, and joy. You see, when we are thinking in these terms and contemplating such mental ability within myself, we should also bear in mind that pleasantness and happiness is actually, people are very rarely really happy. It doesn't happen so often, and it isn't so often around them, the unhappiness. So when somebody really is experiencing happiness, one should really be open and participate and be pleased about it. Sympathetic joy. A great mental ability, which is reducing my egocentricity, my narrow heart, and is tremendously open to others and participating in life. That's very important. You see, to think in these terms would also mean you are in right thinking, right thoughts are happening. These would be right thoughts. Mudita belongs to one of the four divine abodes, or the divine the Brahma Viharas. Brahma means godly, divine. Vihara means abode, dwelling. That is to say, for us to realize that my mind should live in such ability, in such a divine abode, which is actually a mental state. And it needs, however, a great deal of practice. It does. It is not coming with us easily, because the power of envy and the power of jealousy is tremendous in us. And they are the ones which are constantly weakening and overcoating these high human quality of mudita or of sympathetic joy. Do you understand that? Why it's important? Have you observed the opposite mostly or often? Could you say an example, Kerstin, where you observed the opposite, where people are not joyful and happy with other people's happiness? Do you have some? You don't need to tell it, but would you think you have, say you have observed it?
Yes, and I've observed that people have been very surprised when one being very happy because they were successful or something, and mm-hmm. they've been reacting as if they were very surprised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because to be open and happy is really rare. It's not so much around. People are rather closed in and narrow-minded. Uh-huh. They are rather closed in and narrow-minded. Yes. And then there is another divine abode which we could cultivate and to which we could open up, to which actually the Buddha invites. For he sees these four abodes as, or these four mental states, mudita, and the second I just mentioned, compassion, and one is metta, we talked about. Yeah, the compassion karuna and metta we talked about a few days ago, and then the last one is upekkha or quietness. He counts these mental ability as qualities of perfection of a human being.
What is compassion?
Where that I'm coming to
it,
where that is that mind which can feel the pain and the suffering of others and is in an understanding way and in such a way that he is so open with his heart that he can act and help. Compassion does open the door. Compassion, yes, opens the door and supports tremendously the ability to be happy with other people, about the happiness of other people. If you understand the suffering deeply, the dissatisfaction of life, you understand deeply the level of impermanence, and you even know that we are one day leaving and dying, that is a deep understanding of the of suffering of life, and that is the feeling of compassion. And if you have that widened and open in your heart, then it also that assists very much the feeling of sympathetic joy, see, when you understand deeply about the suffering in life. So compassion is being is not the feeling sorry that and Yeah, feeling sorry for that what is incomplete and suffering and so unhappy in life. It is more this that you really feel because you understand it in your own heart from your own experience. Some people don't, because they maybe have they don't have that understanding, but somehow life is so designed that one day they also begin to understand through some hard experiences life gives them, through some sudden death, through some sudden loss, through some hard felt, through some experiences which are very shocking and sorrow producing. So then in that feeling of feeling the pain and the sorrow of life and feeling the inevitability of that, then the heart opens very, very easily in that to appreciate the joy in other people, to appreciate the happy events in which people dance and play and meet and are joyful. So, karuna or compassion is also a state of being in which we can perfect ourselves, widen, that means widen our heart, let loose from my very personal concerns and from my just being caring and care for my desires and for my needs. The deep understanding of the condition of life really cuts through the egocentricity, and that's why it is important to think about it and to contemplate in that and to understand that deeply, the condition of life, so the heart widens and goes over the limitation of that I or me. And that's why the Buddha calls for this perfecting yourself in this, or this growing in this state of mind. It's important also for another reason, I would say, very important. There is so much suffering and so much unhappiness and so many problems and so much pain in life, that if we don't develop this kind of heart and allow the mind to be able to feel it and to be sensitive to that and understanding and awake to that condition, we cannot help each other. This feeling makes able the help of each other. Very important to see that. We all have it. I don't tell you anything new in the book. And the teaching doesn't sound so new for that, but it makes the point clear that it stresses the fact that we should become more aware of that and more conscious of it, that we understand it clearly and don't mix up karuna or the feeling of compassion with the feeling of being sorry. That, pardon?
Pity.
Yeah, feeling pitiful, mm-hmm. or feeling I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Excusez-moi moi, this kind mm-hmm. of thing. It's a very superficial feeling, which actually says more an expression of, well, I acknowledge you are in that pain or in that unhappiness, and I am not, I'm just sorry about it. Mm. You see, it's not rich in the depths, it's but the other one is a real feeling on a level where you see it in yourself, through your sensing in yourself. This body is impermanent. This body has no substance. This body is one day going to die. It also is suffering with sickness and pain and so on. You see, from that, also considering the mental pain in it. You see, if you awake in the morning, you feel your pain, you feel miserable, you begin to, you feel aching all over, you know you have to go to work, it's already late, you cannot eat really breakfast, you are in a hurry, and if you continue that way, the heart narrows down, and at the end there is nothing but a very congested, contracted heart, just feeling this me and this negative negativity. But just the moment you realize that you, with you together this morning, are getting up so many people, and there is no reason to think that they are feeling better than you. They are probably really sick, much sicker than you. They maybe have less food. They maybe have no transportation. They maybe have worries what to eat. I mean, just that thought of that is a feeling of understanding this condition in others, the pain you just feel, or just so many other people who feel like you for no reason. They are aching and unhappy and dissatisfied, but the minute you open up to the thought that others share that with you, you are out of this congestion. The heart widens. Now that's not the only possibility to get out of our narrowness, but this is a very potential one, and the Buddha urges us very vehemently to contemplate that and to see yourself participating every moment in the universal condition of life, suffering, unhappiness, pain, and so on. And that takes you out of that narrowness. It might even afford you a smile, you see, because you begin to appreciate a happy heart, a harmonious situation, or a pleasing situation. So that is the Brahma Vihara Karuna, or the divine abode of compassion. About metta, we talked, remember, a whole evening. But I would like tonight, because I also asked to go through those 14 qualities, just very shortly, briefly, because I'm asked, which are the qualities which help us widening the heart, preparing it for metta, for that feeling in us which is all-embracing in lovingness, in a way, in friendliness, in tenderness and gentleness, somehow again, this feeling is not just directed to what you personally, what is so very personally connected, what pleases you, and that therefore you love it. No, this is that ability which can reach out to more than just one person or to just one object. It is not so selective anymore. It lets them all come in. Here I like to go through. Remember, the first one was one shall be able, just be able. You should see to it that there's a skill and that you are giving effort and that you are open to that, to somehow making yourself interested with some in some doing, in some skill in this samsaric world, not just living in a retreat and denying these things. Number two, one shall be straight and open-minded. That does mean you are kind of trusting, and you have a mind which can listen, and there is that element of interest in it. You see, these are qualities which are really open. They are not closing in, and no one's, it's not a thing which is just concerned about my emotions. I think, you see, the word emotion in the Buddha's teaching does not even exist. It's no word like this. They speak of mental states, but not of emotion. We have somehow become so engulfed by these personal feelings and call them emotions, and have made them quite a, and still do quite a great deal out of it. And it comes because we become, I think, it's a closing in, it's a trend toward egocentric living. We have lost, I think, or we have thrown overboard, that's the way I can understand it sometimes, overthrown a lot of our old values, the connectedness to the religion, which was determining a little bit our life and giving us direction, then which also calls for charity and for sharing and giving, and we kind of are cool on that. The old religions don't say anything to us anymore, and also our personal relationships have tremendously suffered, and family relationships too. There is no not anymore that hold to them. They don't mean anymore what a family meant in other times, where there was given a lot of directions through this unit. So we have thrown, and morality, we have thrown overboard quite a lot of institutions which have given us guidance, And even the politics, the connectedness with the land, and with the with some, it doesn't have that ideal connectedness or that connection in which we saw some guidance or some ideal. So what is left? The human being is left alone with its own emotions. Understand that, Björn? It's so. It is the truth. We are left with that. And so that is not a real relationship to my emotions. But we have made a relationship to our emotions, to our depression, such a big thing. To my anger, such a big thing. To my jealousy, all becomes big problem. And that's not the real satisfying relationship. You see, it's narrowing down. The heart is just not, it's bypassed, it's not widened. It's a narrowing, egocentricness. And I get strong here, which doesn't exist in the first place. To see that is very important, to understand that, why we are in the dilemma we are. On a personal level or on the society level. So here are given these 14 qualities. You see, they are just counteracting all this and call for opening of heart, for not being concerned so much about these feelings. It says, go out, be open-minded, be straight, learn something, be direct, don't mind, not being obstinate or defensive. The number 5 is similar, to speak mildly, to keep in mind, not to be angry right away when I get criticized. Stand up straight, listen to it. Again, widening of heart, you see. Not that it also means not a proud heart. Not you are too proud to listen because that one was insulting you or was not doing the right thing. It's always in the direction. Give up this narrowing down yourself. Let go and open up. And these 14 qualities, they help us to develop metta, the first divine abode, to break through that limitation of egocentricness. And then number 6 is, one shall be content and realize that there is that we are not perfect. Be content even with your weaknesses. Not complacently and neurotically content, but in kind of understanding. Yeah, I'm a human being, I'm learning, I am not awakened, so naturally I will be not, I'm not perfect. So there is a little stop when you realize that, to become rigid and insisting something. Number 7, one shall be easy to satisfy, not always being so critical and not have too high demands. Just on a very basic level, be satisfied with things around. And if you don't like them, if it cannot change, and you see it isn't such a big thing, you just bend down or make that movement which keeps that nuisance, eliminates that nuisance. It's an open heart, you see. you get over this. I'm not doing it. Then number 8 is one shouldn't be too busy keeping too many jobs and constantly busy. Why? That creates restlessness. It's a sort of striving. You should consciously allow yourself restfulness and enough rest too. And you should understand, you know, that for one reason we do exhaust ourselves very much far quicker than it is necessary, because part of the time, or most of the time, we do not unfold ourselves in knowing about it, in being attentive to that, and that exhausts ourselves very fast. So if you know that, then you're also not so angry when you are so very tired. You begin to understand why you are tired. Also, it is most of it is not just the plain exhaustion from my work, but it is because I add to that unattentiveness to my living process, to my relationship with work, or to my in my relationship to my partner, by too much talking and not observing enough silence. And that means rest for the mind. It actually also means rest for the body. Rest for the senses above all. And that is number 10. Mm-hmm. Rest for the senses. One should be conscious not to pursue too many things and have this feeling, oh, I'm missing something there. Look around and see whether what is the surrounding offering to you and what is lacking. Whether you really need to move out to pursue that desire. Number 9 is not to be wasteful and quite concerned in saving and being economic. And that to me implies also a certain appreciation to the things we use, to the things we create, to the things which have come to us, to materials, in other words. And you see that again, that is not a closing in quality of the heart. I must look. There is that old chest or so. I look. I see, yes, it's a wonderful carving there down at its side. Wonderful. A loving hand must have made it. Maybe it wasn't a loving hand. Anyway, it created something very beautiful. And the moment you see really that piece there, that thing in that consideration, it can be a flash, you don't need to write a whole poem about it, but you somehow see it and connect it to the idea that it has been created by a human being, by a heart, by a mind, you see, you are out of your narrowness. You relate. Each one of these 14 qualities is a suggestion to relate openly, and it is also that's why Buddha gives it to us to consider. Actually, he doesn't give us these qualities. We have them. We all have them. There's not one missing in us, but they have to be brought more into consciousness and into more activity by narrowing down and being just concerned about our me and my emotions and my pityfulness, deprive yourself from experiencing these qualities, experiencing your mind, your heart, your body in these qualities. very actually very simple, isn't it? It's very beautiful. It's a map given to us, actually. That's the whole teaching, actually. The map is laid out. We just need to follow. But somehow we're not convinced when we hear these things. We pass it by. It is too simple and too direct. And it, although actually we all long for openness of heart and good relationship and lovingness and so on, but somehow it's when one hears like that, I experience that often, one isn't convinced about it yet. One doesn't trust it quite. Is that what it is about life? Is that? I wanted actually enlightenment. You see? So number 11 is, don't allow yourself to be overwhelmed by other people's emotions. Do not get wiped away by thoughts which the majority has, or everybody thinks like that. Give it consideration, but stand back and allow yourself to think in that situation. Not in an insisting way, but with a certain flexibility of mind and heart.
I think that is very difficult.
Sure it is.
I think that's why many people retreat, because other people's restlessness and eagerness.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is all right. Dared to retreat, that you should retreat, but it's more also here perhaps also meant that when you are faced with that situation, you find yourself in the situation where everything is kind of in uproar and in disconcertedness, that you are not getting wiped out by that. You are seeing the situation and keep it in the light of your attention, perhaps, so that you don't get overwhelmed. And that doesn't mean you have to you stand up with a hardened heart and with some kind of rigidity. No. It's not meant that. You must always keep begin to feel here of what, where, in which direction these qualities really go, or from where they come. They want the opening of heart, and heart is not the physical mind. It is the quality of feeling, which is creating, which is a harmonious situation, which is a healing situation, which is a flowing one with for the good, for the well-being of life. It's not hurting. It is difficult, but you see, that shouldn't stop you, Gerd. Say it is difficult, the minute you say that, and you say it a few times more, you already are behind your door, and you cannot move out anymore. You create a condition which is hardened, which is hard. It is difficult, but that's why it is talked about and suggested. And to open up to it, and maybe in 1 year we succeed to open that much in one of the characteristics. That's enough. It's slow, The good qualities come very slow. They develop slow. So if you think in this way, it does not discourage you and let you retreat and build up a new fence around yourself of isolation and retreating. So, and here the number 12 ties right into the same one, not to be easily influenced, and because that also is bringing you in a certain dependency. Now we all are actually dependent on each other. We have the dependency right here living. My organs inside do depend upon the air coming in, the oxygen. And the oxygen depends on the good organs. If I depend in many ways upon the society, I depend on the wood for my heating. I am in many ways depending. As I said, my living process itself is dependent. The mental faculties do depend on the physical faculty. And the physical cannot be living without the mental. So I am that dependent process, you see? That is, but we are talking, so that a certain amount, you know, is in a way, because I, let me say this, I am a dependent process, I know of that. So I will be tending, if I'm not aware of it, to fall into greater dependencies and on the outside and go along with that. Recognize this so that you get into balance. The whole thing hinges on balance. The whole Dharma work. Be not greedy and not clinging. There's another one, number 13. The last one is stay away. That is one of the very spiritual ones here of the 14th. Stay away from that what wise people do not approve of or are scolding. That's, so, and then we have, that was the third, a divine abode, and let us mention now the last one. That is upekkha, or equanimity. Now, that is the very difficult one. It is that quality, that ability of mind, which is in balance, which is even-minded, which doesn't react. And that means, again, it's indicating opening of heart, not narrowing down. It has an even mind. So whatever comes in, it doesn't react and close in or defend or throw the world away. There is calmness is in the mind, which is in harmony and can in harmony relate to the outside. It is actually the most important feeling, ability, because it supports tremendously mudita, or sympathetic joy. It tremendously supports metta, or love, loving kindness, and supports also compassion, because all these could not really feel or be joyful or understand the feel the suffering of others as compassion does, if there were not in an evenness and a certain calmness in the heart. In the scriptures it is expressed in a very simple way, the power of this feeling in us. We are constantly exposed to four pairs of opposites, and that is profit, or well, how can you say profit better? Giving. What is giving? Gain and loss. Between the two. Between honor and shame. Between praise and scolding. What is praise and
blame?
Blame, yes. I have it here in German, so I don't understand. And between pleasantness and unpleasantness, or happiness and sorrow, these four pairs of conditions we are facing every minute, in different forms, in different degrees, in different intensities. The Chinese call it the four winds. And equanimity now, or upekkha, is that ability which is not depending on these, has that strength when these are that it is actually when this is happening, loss or gain, honor or shame, praise and what did you say, blame, unhappiness and happiness. Upekkha is this balance of mind which just permeates through, or the others just go like a wind by. You're not overwhelmed, and you don't become victim of that. And that is also maybe good to know for us that upekkha is a very important factor for enlightenment. There are seven factors of enlightenment. One is right effort, and one is joy, and one is equanimity. So if we, as long as we will react and are wiped out or overwhelmed by these four winds, we are building the, we are narrowing down our heart, we are building on on hindrances for enlightenment. So, and the development of upekkha is part of our practice, is part of our meditation. But you also can develop it and support it and open the heart to it, not just through meditation.